I got to a point where I could own that I was still doing something big. I was still contributing to the business. I started learning a ton with all the kids about human development, neuroscience. We have a few kids that are on the autism spectrum. And just for my own mental sanity and health to be doing such intense hard work to support and create the space for Jerry to 150% be able to focus on the business.
Welcome to the Investing RN podcast, your number one resource for nurses and healthcare professionals who want to take control of their financial well-being and build a life of abundance and freedom. Hosted by Josh Condado and Colin Davis.
Each week, we bring you insightful interviews with successful nurses, entrepreneurs, and experts in the field. Together, we'll explore the world of investing, uncover strategies to overcome challenges, and inspire you to create a thriving portfolio.
Whether you're a new nurse, just starting out, or a seasoned veteran, Investing RN is here to equip you with the knowledge, tools, and inspiration you need to invest your time, money, and relationships wisely.
Welcome to the Investing RN podcast. Today, we're joined by a very special guest that Josh and I met at WealthCon, Anne-Marie Norton. So we know of the Nortons from just being in the real estate world and big stuff with flipping and wholesaling. And that might not make sense to a lot of people, but by the end of this episode, it should. And we actually sat across from Anne-Marie at lunch in at this WealthCon back in October and got to talking about kids. They have a few of them
just
that we'll talk
few.
About. Just a few. They have kids and they're running a business, and to kind of get the perspective of what it's like to run a business and raise a family and the schooling and all that that goes into it. So thank you for joining us today. We're really excited to have you.
I'm super excited to be here.
So go ahead. Do you mind telling us your background? So we usually start by everybody kind of going through their background. What was their life like before the entrepreneur bug, like really, I guess,
yeah.
bit them?
Okay. I got to go way back right now. So I always knew that I wanted to be a mom. But I also knew I wanted to be able to experience a lot of things in a big way in my life. And I ended up, growing up in kind of a really conservative religious background. And there was a lot of, I think, kind of competing views between family and business and which one was like the more righteous thing to do. And so I spent a lot of my life kind of trying to reconcile this, good angel and bad angel that was on my shoulders of like, which thing should I pay more attention to? And we did always want to have a big family, but we got about four bonus babies, including a post-vasectomy baby. And so babies just kind of kept on coming. And of course, every baby is a blessing. But we kind of hit this point in our marriage where we had this, I think, a really common masculine and feminine energy pull. And it really doesn't matter if it is the man or the woman who's kind of representing that polarity that's really natural in a couple or even natural in a business partnership, where, one of us kind of really had the eye on maintaining the relationships and the investment in the relationship. And then another one of us had the eye on kind of looking at the family from the outside in, the threats that were coming in, providing, winning, conquering. And so early in our marriage, this conversation and this dynamic that I think I had from my childhood, it just kind of amplified things until it hit critical mass where my husband and I were just fighting over what was the more important thing. And it was costing peace. It was costing our marriage, intimacy. And the more that my husband was kind of pushing for, no, investing and business is where it's at, the more that I would just kind of rebel and push on, no, you need to be investing in our family more. That's where it's at. And of course, the more that you're making it mean something about whether you're right or wrong, the less that you can actually see the truth. And the more that you're pulling that rope just until it was like this close to ripping. And there was so much going on and so many kids and like just lots of investment and logistics in our business that it was either we choose how to work on this together or we're not going to have it together. And once we hit that point, then our mindset just shifted to a more equal parts, but different gifts, and coming more from a place of wholeness versus lack, to be able to each own our gifts and create rocket fuel on our marriage, on our business, and our family, in owning each of our individual gifts and then really merging them together after pretty much like a life of this extreme polarity, I think. So that's kind of where I'm coming from.
This episode is sponsored by All Day Investments. If you would like to get your start in real estate investing, but don't want to deal with toilets or tenants, we have several new opportunities that might interest you. Head over to alldayinvestments.co/invest or follow the link in our show notes to book a call with our team. So I'm going to try to pick apart the timelines a little bit. So you already had six kids before you started having these entrepreneur business investing like discussions inside your house. Is that what?
No. I guess what happened was I'm baby number three. My husband, well, before we got married, he told me he wanted to be a chiropractor. So there, like in the, nurturing industry, like you guys are, he does not have a personality though for being attentive to patients. And so I think he figured that out pretty quickly, that that wasn't actually what he wanted to do. And he was working for his dad at the time. He was going to school to get his business degree. And so he was really getting to see, as he was doing his business degree, some of the loopholes that were happening with his dad's business. And he just got really interested in figuring out how to have his own business, but it was in construction. And there was a lot of things about the industry. He would come home like completely covered in mud, you know, out in the elements, and was like, I don't want to do this forever. So I remember really clearly after, well, I guess it was right before baby number three, like coming in bed and seeing him hiding under the covers. And he had like The Art of the Deal by Donald Trump, like hidden under the covers. And I was like, you evil man, how could you, you know, this womanizer, and, you know, all he cares about is money. And I was totally like, oh, our family's ruined because he's having this like horrible influence. And I think he kind of toned it down and put it on the sly a little bit. And on the way home from having baby number three, he literally comes and picks me up from the hospital, and he's like, I have this surprise that I want to show you. And he drives me into Pontiac, Michigan, into this rundown neighborhood. And he shows me these two like barred up houses in a rough area, and is like, I bought two houses. And like, I'm in the throes of hormonal postpartum, and I'm crying, you idiot, normal people only have one house. What are you doing? But he really quickly started through wholesaling, just in like two different deals, made the amount of money that he was making working for construction in just two deals that he would make in a whole year. And so even though, you know, I had this really strong sense, I knew just what was the right thing, being able to see the resources that he could accrue and the safety and security and the experiences that could come from real estate really did make a lot of sense. And so it's where it kind of started to edge me over to maybe I don't know everything about everything.
So I kind of resonate with that story, because when we first started doing our own real estate investments and stuff, my wife wasn't completely on board, and I might have bought a house anyway. So definitely a bad idea. I don't recommend to anybody, but it clearly worked out for you guys. It's worked out for us. So was there a specific reason why you were so hesitant to get into the game? Did you have some sort of a bad experience or bad?
So I actually went to an international school. I grew up, I was born in Canada. I went to an international school in Switzerland. Most of the people that I went to school with were pretty affluent. And I just did see, you know, compared to this like conservative Christian, super strong family values, to a lot of the relationships that I saw in affluence in this international school that I went to, where it seemed like there was not as much connection. And this connection was really such a valuable big part that just my younger self was really just making it really black and white, that there was no way to be able to do both. And so just as I got older and I was like, if I keep shaming people who are trying to have resources, like, of course, I have no idea if that was even true. I think I was just trying to justify in my teenage dumb whether or not, you know, me wanting to be a stay-at-home mom, like the school that I went to was a really prestigious school. Most of my schoolmates were going to Ivy League schools. And I was telling my teachers, even though I was valedictorian, I was telling my teachers, I just want to stay at home and have kids. And they were like, no, you have skills, like you need to branch out. And I knew that I could have skills and kind of run a home, and that also was a really valuable thing. And so I think I was trying to kind of demonize money even more to justify what I was going towards. And when I was, then it started to mean that I had to demonize my own husband, that wasn't working for me or for us. And that's when my mindset kind of had to shift. And of course the kids are going to map that. It starts to have impact. The more that I was pushing on the business, the harder it was for the business to be successful, obviously. And the more that I was pushing on the business and kind of obligating my spouse towards my way of being or what I deemed to be the only important thing, which is just not true that that's the only important thing, the more polarity we kind of created in this tug of war between the two of us.
Yeah. I think that kind of, I don't know if maybe I'm not taking this right the way, but the demonizing of like wealth and money.
Yeah.
We all kind of grew up in the same church. Not the exact same building, but yeah. The same style of church. And it was like this thing of like, it was almost like, you know, a lot of Bible stories, it's like, you know, it's easier to, get through the camel to get through the eye of a needle than a rich man to get to heaven.
Yep.
And like all these different things that maybe were taken out of context, but it's like all of us individually had this idea of like, if you're rich, like you're evil and like you shouldn't pursue wealth.
Yep.
It's selfish. So like now it sounds like obviously that's changed for you. And how do you guys kind of view it now in terms of like what you've been able to create and what you're able to do with that wealth?
Yeah. So I think just being able to grow myself up to not have such a fixed mindset, not such a black and white mindset, and shifting to that there is goodness in absolutely everything. And the goodness comes from the integrity in how you use it. And if you're motivated towards making money because you're trying to prove your worth, that I think is ego, that I think is a sin, that I think is not satiable. But if you're using wealth for good, if you're using it for growth's sake, for experience sake, that I think is absolutely an inspiration and for good and a beautiful thing. And we started to see with that mindset, the kind of opportunities, experiences, comfort, safety, education, lifestyle, our lifestyle with this many kids and living between two places. We live in Puerto Rico 9 months out of the year. We live in Montana about 3 months out of the year. So we have a lake house, we have an ocean house, and there's just, we actually are flying back to Puerto Rico tomorrow. So I look out right now at my snowy mountains, and I'm tomorrow going to be in, you know, 83 degrees with the ocean. The context, that the gratitude that I get to experience salty smells versus piney smells, like I don't take any of it for granted. I think it's amazing. And I want as many experiences as I can, as many experiences as my kids can have. Like, life is still hard. No matter how much money you have, you still have to grow yourself up around what your money means about you. But being able to practice doing that from a whole place, I do think that resources just create so much more freedom, so much more options, and they also give you so much more power for good, like the way that you can impact others around you. The platform that we've been able to build up to just be able to share what things are reducing our suffering, what things are helping us to grow and have impact on others that way. Like, we love that. The experience of that is, it's beautiful. And it wouldn't have happened without pursuing wealth.
Yeah. I know I like the analogy that money is just a magnifying glass. If you're generous while you don't have money, you'll be more generous when you do have money, and it goes along the lines of everything. I know Jennifer, it looked like Jennifer had a question.
Yes, I was going. So before you forget, I was going to unmute myself there. So I just wanted to jump in and ask about, it sounds like in the beginning of your, or when you're talking about you and your husband kind of going back and forth towards the beginning of your business journey, were you involved with him, like in the business in the beginning, or were you more trying to like push it away? I'm just curious on how the evolution of you guys forming this building and our business and how you guys work together now versus then.
Yeah. No, great question. At the beginning, I didn't want anything to do with the business. I think because of some of the negativity that I had around it. Well, actually, no, I think that that was something that developed starting off. We really did feel like the synergy of, you know, and I really do feel like this doesn't have to be gender specific, but that within a couple, there is someone who tends to be, you know, more nurturing, another one that's maybe like more ambitious or more extroverted or like whatever the things are, that my personality, my natural gifts lent well. I wanted to be able to be at home with my babies. I wanted to nurse them. You guys are all nurses. I went into a pregnancy-induced heart failure after baby number 5. My ejection fraction dropped to under 20%. I was on a transplant list. Wow. They told me if I had any more babies, I would for surely die. And I had 5 more after that. But yeah, wow. Yeah. Well, it shouldn't be about that for sure. That is a real thing. But I was able to... completely heal from that. I don't have any chronic heart issues anymore, but the context, especially that heart failure happened kind of right after Jerry started to do real estate. And so really that was when I pulled my kids out of school because I realized I don't know how much time I'm going to have with them. And when it was not so much just looking at the experience of my own life, but looking at the experience cumulatively of a family. And, you know, in the business world, we talk about ROI all the time, return on investment. Well, I think somebody also needs to be thinking about the return on intimacy. And so whether that is intimacy with self, intimacy with your spouse, or intimacy with the kids, there does need to be someone who has their eye on that ball. And I really was completely content to just keep my eye on that ball and to support Jerry and be his blocker. And if the internet was down or the car needed a repair or like just any logistics at home, I have some crazy operator skills. I'm really smooth at putting a system together. I totally could write a cheaper by the dozen book. We just needed to have 2 more kids. But all those cheesy things, we had them, buddy systems, family laundry style. I've got food systems or like that don't include any meal prep and an automatic like grocery list that just shows up and gets ordered and somebody else who goes and picks it up. Chore rotations and just like the house maintenance stuff. I threw myself fully into loving, like figuring out how to cultivate from within, because motherhood comes with very little external validation. But we just looked at what we were trying to create. And I really have gotten to a point where I cultivated a love of just nurturing, a love of just keeping my eye on the ball of the relationships. I put myself into my role within our family as though I was the CEO of the home. And I literally created SOPs because any business book that Jerry would get as he was building his business, we'd read them together. And then we had a really unique perspective to be like, okay, I'm going to use that SOP in the family like this. And then we'll use that SOP in the business over here. So we started to figure out how to grow business and family up in the same way at the same time, instead of compartmentalizing them. But it still, I guess, to the world would look like I was not a part of any of the logistics that were happening in the business, but I was. And I really did start to feel like this is our business. I'm just for the greater good of the movement of the brand, I'm okay to stay behind the scenes. I still have little nurselings. I've been pregnant or breastfeeding or both for the past 24 years now, not quite finished nursing my youngest, who's two. And so I got to a point where I could own that I was still doing something big. I was still contributing to the business. I started learning a ton with all the kids about human development, neuroscience. We have a few kids that are on the autism spectrum. And just for my own mental sanity and health to be doing such intense hard work to support and create the space for Jerry to 150% be able to focus on the business. And then now that my baby's almost done nursing, I'm coming out into the world. I'm having a chance to grow a different part of myself. I got the chance to really feel like I fully got the motherhood experience the way that I wanted to. And now I'm ready to grow up into a little thing. Not that I was like not growing when I was just at home. I feel like those skill sets, the leadership, the, you know, systems orchestration, the discipline, the endurance, like all of those things that I grew as a mom have absolutely are contributing to what I'm building with Jerry now in a more open role. So I don't know, Jen, does that answer your question?
Yes. Yes. That was amazing. I've never heard of applying SOPs to the family life. And I love that. That's brilliant. I mean, that it totally makes sense how you could even just run a house with 10 kids. Cause that was my first thought. I was like, how? I have one toddler and I'm like, I don't know what I'm doing.
Oh, that
like
was me too with one toddler.
it's definitely tough times when, you're raising a family and also trying to build a business. So I'm going to definitely have to figure out how to apply that as well to our life. Cause that sounds like the way to go as you're building. Yeah. I mean, even just running, organized household.
It's a full-time job.
Even if you're not doing business. Yeah,
for sure.
Did you implement these SOPs in your family out of necessity because you saw a little bit too much chaos, or is this something that you had prepared very early on and you were just ready for a larger family because you knew that's the direction you
were heading? I did swing the pendulum a little bit from what I grew up with. My mom is a free spirit that is not really systematized, and I'm the oldest of five. And my dad, actually, he worked for General Motors and he was in charge of creating systems for training, like in human resources in General Motors. And that's why we lived centrally in Europe, so that he could travel to all the different countries to be able to help set up plants. So I think I just kind of developed some of that skill set from my dad and swung a little bit, like is so normal to do in a family with whatever you kind of don't have, you want a little bit of. Creates great balance for the next generation. So I knew I wanted to have some systems, but I definitely also, the more kids that we were having, and especially like I was, if I'm really honest, like at the beginning, especially before the heart failure set in, was resentfully accommodating because Jerry was so ambitious and like, I am doing this business no matter what. And so because of so much of that focus was on the business, I had to figure out systems because of how much I was juggling on my own in order to kind of sacrifice for him to like the mental power that can happen that I'm sure every entrepreneur is relating to is that when you don't have like, when do the tires need to get changed? Or I need to call the insurance back, or I haven't read a book with my kid. Like when you don't have that noise in the back of your mind, because you really know somebody else is covering all of that. Like that is a really valuable tool. It's just not a really realistic tool to, you can't obligate to get somebody else to do that. And it's not a realistic tool for being able to enjoy your life as you go. So I know a lot of people might listen to this and think, well, you guys did the same thing as everybody else. Like you kind of, you know, from Jerry's perspective, like ignore the family a little bit, and then you just get your business going and then you can come back together. But I really don't think that when you're looking at the long-term laying on your deathbed, reverse engineering of, well, I missed out on those years. When I look at the kind of connection and passion, like, we are total nerds, you guys. We are so cheesy and gushy and lovey on each other that, like, you might have seen it on social media. Jerry made a post about it. I was totally mortified that he did. But, like, we literally do not buy first class tickets because we want to sit so close to each other when we're away from the kids, or even not, that the little section thing in between first class feels too far apart from each other. And we legit are like that. But there was a whole time in our life when we weren't that way because we weren't freely doing the skill set of what you need to do of, like, a growth mindset around our marriage, an integrative versus a fixed. You know, it's either all about relationship or about business. And a lot of times in kind of some of these different groups, you hear this dialogue amongst the entrepreneurs. We don't vacation, we don't sleep, we are our own janitors. And yes, I think there needs to be sacrifice. But then you will also have in, like, maybe, you know, highly just family oriented group of people where it's, yeah, the love of money is the root of all evil. And I think in order for our marriage to survive, it really was just like, oh my gosh, we have to find a way to come into the middle and just being able to let go of our own egos and what we each thought was the most right and see a whole picture of the goodness of both. It's so much more rewarding that I still do wish that we would have gone back. Like, I do have regret over the polarization. And we're old enough now, too. Lots of the voices in social media that are entrepreneurs, I'm like, y'all are in your 30s, aren't you? Because you realize when your mortality hits and it starts to become more about the experience that we're like, okay, we're lucky to be old enough and still have this platform, but we want to be able to talk about what our ideal 30s would have looked like. And it would have been a lot less, you know, apart and polarized. And it's all fine because it gave us context, and we really do appreciate our relationship so much now because of it. But we also came this close to losing all of it. And we also have a lot of friends who are our age, and they're losing all of it because of how much energy they put into their business. And, like, the rules of business apply. We know if you don't do any investing, you get no return. So if you're not investing in intimacy, you also will get no return. Those laws that apply to make an SOP work at home and make an SOP work at business are the same thing with your investment. So it's kind of ridiculous logic, in my opinion, to think I'm just going to work on one. Also, because you're missing out on all the skill set that comes when you are compartmentalizing the right time to work on your family, you're missing out on the skill set that also could contribute to your business because of the discipline, the self-validation, the leadership, you know, the follow-through. It all transfers. Stay-at-home moms are not wasting their time, in my opinion. They are growing themselves right up,
Oh,
as long
no.
as you have the right mindset about it.
So you mentioned the return on intimacy. I definitely want to kind of get into your SOP for your relationship with your husband. But one of the things that I've found as we're building a business, you know, as a husband and wife team with a toddler, is like at dinner, we'll be sitting there and we're like talking about deals and talking about all this stuff. And then, like, you know, look over and she's just kind of sitting there and like doing her little thing. And sometimes she'll start acting up and it's like, she just wants us to pay attention to her. She doesn't care about like all this stuff. She just, and it's like, so I guess, how do you kind of, how did you guys, or what system did you build to kind of shut that off and have those boundaries where it's like, okay, like obviously, 'cause you guys got a lot going on. And with 10 kids, like that's a lot of different people seeking your attention. So how did you systematize that?
Yeah, so I think the system is compartmentalization. And I started in, like, human development, in learning about relational therapy, learned about these different concepts of differentiation, and really being able to be in, like, a third stage development of being motivated from within instead of being motivated by external factors. And that's the complicated way I think of saying we really learned how to compartmentalize and be very disciplined about whatever it is that we decided was the time of day for that thing. So I'm actually getting ready to share on social media, on my Instagram, a post for, you know, because it's the beginning of the year. A lot of people are thinking about their schedules. Back, I don't know, we're in Montana and we have all of like our personal things are here and they've been all packed away because we've been doing renovating. So I'm pulling out all these spreadsheets and kind of some of the different graphs and stuff that I've used to like literally run my home like a CEO. And there was this digital printout that I found that is called, I think I called it like Game Day for the Nortons. And it's like this S and it's this really cool graphic and it just shows like chunks of the day. And I mean, I really think that I probably did that. It's got to be like a decade ago, maybe more. Ugh, I feel old. It might be like 15 years old. And I'm looking at this flow of the day and I'm like, oh my gosh, we still have this flow to the day. And it's this very intentional reverse engineering of what are the big rocks that you really want to put into your life. And then, yes, you create the SOP for that. And a lot of that is just even chunks of time per day. So the whole S follows with like these cheesy little names of like, you know, morning, getting ready. And at that time, too, we didn't have our business to the place that we do now, that obviously this is just like continuing to get even better. But like it would be, you know, my morning rituals. And then that led to, because now my morning ritual is with my husband and we actually spend an entire hour with each other every morning and about 2 hours with each other in the evening. Like marriage takes work. And I think a lot of people listening to that might be like, oh my gosh, I don't have that. It wasn't always the right thing to prioritize probably that amount of time with different stages that the business is at. I honestly feel like if we had some big opportunity come up with our business, we could figure out how to make those 3 hours in, you know, an hour because of the skill set that we've learned of intense discipline and focus to whatever the square of the day is. So if it's couples time in the morning, the phones are off. And we are literally just cultivating and looking each other into the eyes. Guys, it sounds so cheesy, but it's my favorite time of day. It's amazing. It's super uncomfortable and vulnerable at first, but you cultivate, you're like drawing, you're like extracting, not from the other person, but from yourself, all the gratitude and lovey. Like it's actually so intense too, because you learn how to feel these really intense feelings. And it makes it that much harder in thinking of, you know, that someday you're going to be separated or that you could lose them to an accident or like it actually makes your life a lot more edgy and in some ways even harder to be able to endure. But it's so worth it for the ecstasy of really being able to be focused. So that's our couple's time in the morning. But then when the couple's time is over and, you know, it's time for me to go and do school with the kids and be really present with the kids. There's nothing else going on. I'm also away from my phone. I'm just as like laser focused with them in the morning when I'm doing school. And I have compartmentalized different times with different groups of kids so that I can really hyper focus. And then we have lunch and there's systems for, you know, a healthy lunch. But then after lunch, that's time for mom to go to work. And I have no guilt when I go to work. Because I know I was right there with them when I needed to be. I'm not distracted about what's going on with my relationship with my husband because I put the time in for that during the day. And then I have my workout time. It's time to focus on my body. It's time to feel the feels of health and, I don't know, research or learn about that. And I'm probably doing that with my kids. But even if I'm a little bit distracted and, you know, I'm trying to incorporate them, but in my mind, I know my main focus is my health at that time. And I think it's for good for them to understand I can validate myself without my mom paying attention to me 24/7. And I'm watching her be self-directed and what she thinks is for her greater good. And I'm secure in the fact that there is a time of day for me. And we do have 10 kids and it definitely is still really hard. And it's just as a mom, I understand that my nature, my children's nature, their nervous systems are built to just tell me that it's not enough. Like, we never feel adored enough, and that's normal. And so I don't make it mean that I'm a bad mom, that my kids don't feel adored enough sometimes, or that I want even more attention from Jerry and I don't want to share him with YouTube or whatever, and just still sit in, it's not enough. And that's just my nervous system. But my higher self tells me it's not true, because we had this amazing moment. And even if it's just one moment, you know, it does take a serious amount of effort and focus and discipline to get there. So I'm not saying that we're having that intense of a moment the entire hour, but that hour is like set aside to be able to cultivate and generate that moment to be able to happen. And then when we come back together at the end of the day, and the systems that we have for our own quiet time, or just more time to just be really present with each other, like, we can jump right back into what that felt like in the morning, to be able to be really intimate, really connected. And you can let the other stuff go, because it's like, I wasn't so fragmented in all the other blurbs of my life, like all the other days. So our day is very scheduled, and that might sound really boring, but we also have like a weekend and a weekday time of year. When we're in Montana, it's the weekend, and we practice spontaneity, and we don't have a schedule except for the big rocks, like couples time in the morning. That's non-negotiable. Date nights, non-negotiable. There's for sure playing that's happening with the kids, and probably an hour for me, at least, to be keeping up on work stuff, Jerry a little bit more. But I feel good about being so strict about our routine in Puerto Rico. We have also resources and helpers that we figured out to help protect that schedule, because that schedule is the key to the actions that need to happen to actually create the result that we're trying to do, which is be connected to 10 kids, have an amazing business, have impact, and feel the feelings of being madly and passionately in love. Like, that's all of it. Who doesn't want all of it?
Yeah. So you guys travel a lot between Puerto Rico, Montana, speaking engagements where we, mm-hmm. where we met you guys. So how, what does that look like with your family of 10 kids? Do you homeschool, or is it like some sort of a hybrid system? How do you deal with that while you're
so
on the road?
We have online tutors. I am going to be starting my kids up next semester. Well, there's two kids now that are high school age, so I will do kind of a hybrid thing for them coming up next fall. But for right now, I have specific just books that I really love. I follow Marlene Peterson. She has a website called The Well-Educated Heart, and it's got all these free resources in a rotation of pretty much like the whole liberal arts conversation of American history. And then depending on what's happening for that month in American history, there's all these spin-offs to different countries, different scientists, different artists and musicians. And so based on whatever country and time in American history of the rotation it is what it is that we're learning about. We learn about the same subjects all together as a family. And it's just much more complex kind of essays and things for the older kids, and just discussions or, you know, coloring pages. We do a lot of detailed map work. And then for the older kids, we have online tutors that just call in. They are willing to be flexible with us with the time zones that we skip around on. And they call in and they get narrations from my kids. They kind of hold them accountable. They're just on Zoom with them, showing their assignments, sending in their assignments. So as a mom, I'm getting to direct the grand conversation for the month. And a lot of those books are not just about the facts of everything that's happening, but they're in the meaning frames of what that person was doing and what they were making it mean in their life, which is super important to me. Because I want to teach my kids to do things for experience sake, not for validation sake. And then besides, like, that's kind of like the fluffy tradition culture part of our homeschool. But then they also do have, you know, where they're practicing SAT prep things, and they've got like an online math program that is really, you know, structured. And then when we were on the mainland, we're going to kind of add ourselves into a homeschool group in Puerto Rico this coming semester. But especially when we're in the mainland, I started a homeschool co-op where they could have opportunity to be a part of student council, and just got a bunch of families together, other moms that would teach in their best thing that they had, or we would hire teachers out, but just so that it wasn't so much on the implementation in my part, but that I was still getting to be the orchestrator, which was my most favorite thing, versus being the facilitator. And I'll also have, you know, like between 12 and 15 year old girls and boys are the most engaging, best tutors that you could ever find, that the kids love because they still have playful energy that some overqualified old person doesn't have. And they will come and sit and read with your kids or play flashcards or do little craft kits. And so I have the rotation of all the teenagers in my neighborhood coming over to play with different ones of my kids in an intentional kind of way. It's also where I'm feeling like I don't have to do all of it. And when people are like, oh my gosh, how does she do it all? I'm not. I'm for sure not. Like, that does not make any sense at all. Anybody who would think that, that's not possible with what we've got going on. But orchestrating it, that's possible.
Do you guys, I mean, with what you're doing, I think, like, you know, the way we kind of grew up, it was like you go to school, you go to college, you get a job. With what you guys have been able to achieve through business and this, I don't know, did you went to college, it sounded like, or did you end up going?
No, I did not.
Oh, okay.
Nope. I did like an associate's with, so I have like a Montessori early childhood development, but I have gotten my 10,000 hours in just learning, and I've done different like nervous system courses.
Yeah,
and,
for sure. Well, that's what I was kind of wondering. Cause it's like now, I mean, before we kind of got into the business world, I would have definitely thought like, okay, like our daughter needs to grow up, go to school, go to college, like whatever.
Yeah.
But now I'm not so convinced. Right. And so how are you guys kind of handling that with your kids? Are you guys kind of just letting them decide, or are you guys pushing something one way or the other?
Yeah, no, my husband definitely has a different opinion about this than I do. He is a total like boo college, even though he went to college.
I like that.
Yeah, he's totally boo college. I think I want to have a more middle ground opinion. I have 10 kids, right? And their skill sets are all going to be different. Like, obviously, if they want to go into a trade, you know, if they want to be a nurse, they're going to have to go to school. And I think school has its place for being able to make sure that there is, you know, a quantifiable line of, you know, awareness before I'm having somebody giving me drugs. And I don't know how else to be able to do that besides a systematized thing like college. And so, also in my like human development, relational therapy, that's probably why you were thinking maybe I'd gone to college. I really have done my 10,000 hours in these different realms that, you know, personality differences, nervous system motivation in what makes you feel safe or not safe is just so different for everyone. And so sometimes it's the right recipe to grow you up to go to college. And I think it needs to be less about like, what will me going to college mean to everyone else? And more the question of what is going to grow me up in the next stage of my life after it's time for me to leave home? Is college going to grow me up the best? Is going to Africa and serving for 2 years going to grow me up the best? Is just starting a business going to grow me up the best and having to provide for myself? This is definitely the conversation we're having with my 19-year-old right now. A couple of my boys decided to go on missions. And I've got one son who's married, another son that's getting married this March. And they're all fuddling through, poor as heck, you know, and it's great because it's grown them up so good. And they have context for learning skills to be able to share a life with a woman that they love. That's a great motivator to grow you up. And so I think sometimes college is the right thing. I don't love giving to our kids that there's one right recipe. And just because everybody else did it means you also should. Again, I want to help them be motivated from within not externally by what everybody else is telling them to do, but really having integrity around, I really feel my personality has these kinds of gifts. What is the venue? Maybe it's a trade, maybe it's a mentorship. What is the real thing that actually, though, is really going to kick my butt to help me grow to be my best self? Like, I'm not a fan of just chilling when it's time, like, especially, I don't know, 19, yeah, 19 to 25. Like, you got to have a lot. You're going to grow up or you're going to get yourself in trouble.
I would be along those lines. Like, if I wasn't in college when I was 19, there would have been some issues, I'm sure. So college was probably the best for me in my situation. But I'm also not sure if I want all. So I got three girls right now, and my wife's pregnant with our fourth boy, first boy. And I'm not sure which direction I want to, like, encourage them to go, I guess. Cause now that business and entrepreneurship has been introduced to me since I graduated. Now I'm like, wow, that there's a whole nother world.
Well, and I think that, you know, what we've told our kids too, is that there just might be some, like, the pressure of being accountable to a professor, the pressure of, you know, organizing your day in a way that just satisfies a bunch of requirements of you, that those kind of skill sets can transfer really well over to being an entrepreneur. Also just the pressure of just being an entrepreneur. I mean, it is really hard for me to tell. Most of my kids so far are not interested in college, except for one. We've got some, like, engineer brains in my family on my side. So I've got two sons, actually. I have another son who's, like, really big, wants to be a philosopher. Like, he goes really deep, but we're trying to be like, okay, how can you make money? How can you still provide for yourself? He loves learning. But yeah, again, it's like all balance. And so I think it just really depends on, you know, what your child's skill set are, and knowing, even if you're not going to use that degree, if that's the best way to help grow you up at the time, then that's okay. But my husband, you know, all of his brothers are also super successful entrepreneurs, and none of them have used their college degree. So it's a really hard argument at our house for college, because it's not been really a tool, which I don't think is completely true, because I do think the college process actually contributed still to my husband's success, even though he's not necessarily using it right now. No,
he'll never
admit
that, though. Right?
I still like his boo. I like his boo college stance.
Yeah.
Boo college. Yeah.
So just kind of, you mentioned that your kids are fumbling along in poverty, or so I forget how you said it, but so that's, I think, something that comes up a lot with, like, you know, people that have done very well for themselves. It's like, how do you, I guess, not control that relationship with your, like, with money and your kids, but, like, how do you mediate it, I guess, or handle it?
Yeah, that's a great question. We do get that question a whole lot. We have something, a system, an SOP, and that we set up in our house that we call family economy. And we've got it all delineated on a spreadsheet. Once you turn 8 years old, you start having an accountability for being able to provide certain resources for yourself, based on either doing extra chores above and beyond, not the normal chores that I would require to just be a part of the family, but above and beyond chores, or working outside of our home, that starting at 8 years old, like, you have to pay for your own shoes. And then when you're 12, you have to pay for your shoes and your clothes. And then when you're 14, you pay for your clothes, your shoes, and your phone. And then when you're 16, it's car insurance, phone insurance, shoes, clothes, leisure, dates. And then when you're 18, you pay for it all. And you're ready, because we slowly have done that. Starting at 8 years old, we help them to understand it doesn't feel good to be grown up and not be contributing to the full capacity of your maturity. And so we start to help them to see what their maturity is capable of, and that we actually would be insulting them to provide things for them that they can provide for themselves, because we'd be indirectly telling them that they're incapable and that mommy and daddy need to do it for them. Now, it's different when they're younger and they don't have that capacity. But as they get older, we help them to kind of slowly pressure them into whatever your maturity can handle is what, as parents, we're going to push you towards. And so I had a cute little story where my son had just got home from his mission. He was totally dirt poor, but he was just struggling to be able to figure out how to manage his money, and had, you know, grown up in a really comfortable lifestyle, but we've had other, you know, like teenage helpers and assistants that have come in, like I told you guys, with helping to like read to the kids, or they might help the little kids with like some extra chores or something. And I was talking to one of them, and she was telling us how kind of like inside our friend group or whatever, that the moms were like, give us the inside scoop. Like, are the Nortons so spoiled? And she's like, I told them all that like, I am way more spoiled than any of the Norton kids. Like, they won't give them anything. They have to pay for all their own stuff. And so even for my oldest, when he was on a mission, he had like a companion that he was with, and his companion was like looking through his pictures that he had and saw a picture of our house and was like, oh my gosh, dude, you're rich. And Jared told us that he's like, no, I told my companion, well, because as soon as he told him that he was rich, the companion was like, can I have your pants? You don't need them. And, you know, he was coming from, you know, more reduced resources from where his situation that he was coming from. And, you know, my son was like, no, you can't have my pants. My parents are rich. I'm not rich. Like, that's my parents' house, not mine. And I remember when he was telling us that story, I was like, yes. Like, that is exactly the mindset that I want them to grow up with, this differentiation that I started to talk about before, of being able to say, you know, I have my belonging to self and my belonging to others. And, you know, starting at age 8, that ability to differentiate from the family that you're born into just gets stronger and stronger. That's why we started at age 8, to really be able to understand, I'm a part of the family, but I need to belong to myself in what experience I'm trying to create. And so, you know, this oldest, he'd come home from his mission and he was like, Mom, I'm just down and out. And, you know, I'm sleeping on an air mattress that pops by morning. You know, I'm on the floor. Can you gift me a mattress for Christmas? And it was the hardest thing I've ever done, guys, to be like, Nope. I wasn't planning on buying you a mattress for Christmas. And did say to him, if I bought you the mattress, you would feel like I thought that you were not capable. And I'm not going to do that to you. I love you too much. I know you can figure it out. Hung up the phone, cried my eyes out, watching my baby struggle, but knowing that that was the best thing for him. So we definitely have a very strong, and we do have kids that are working for us. Our oldest is helping to manage the hotel that we renovated in Puerto Rico. And, but he's like working under a property manager because he's never managed that kind of property before. So we're not like giving him jobs that he doesn't have the skill set for. He's not getting, like, we show him within the industry, this is the kind of salary that comes with your skill set. Just because you're my son, like, it's not going to be any different. We want you to have the opportunity to learn the skill set, and you won't if there's not the motivation of what you have the capacity to earn. So it's great because we have these resources to maybe be able to give our kids different opportunities, but hopefully not with that opportunity entitlement that their life should be a certain way because their parents figured stuff out. And we tell them, like, between you and me, and maybe I shouldn't be doing this on a recording, that they're getting nothing when we die. Like, maybe we'll change our mind for like when they're after 50. But as far as they know, we're like, it's all going to charity. So figure yourself out.
That's, I mean, it sounds kind of hardcore, but I can definitely appreciate it because it's like I've seen the results of doing things the opposite way and it's not good.
Yeah.
And it's like, yeah, it seems like, oh, yeah, just buy the kid a mattress. But it's like, no, there's a greater good here. And I can't imagine like I'm, you know, you picked the age 8. I know that wasn't random based on everything you've studied and all that. So it's like, yeah, there's definitely a methodical approach to this. And it's like, you know, good for you guys. I think it's great to hear that.
Yeah. I'm going to botch this, but I know I've heard like generational wealth is usually lost within a certain amount of generations. And you clearly are avoiding that. You're teaching them the skills they need.
Yeah. Well, I don't want it to come between our relationship either. I think that they will be able to map deep down that I don't think that they're capable, and there will be resentment deep down between us, and they won't even be able to put their finger on why do I not feel like hanging around mom. Well, it's because I don't think that she really thinks that I am capable to do anything, and I'm not willing to risk my relationship over comfort.
Yeah, and then I guess especially too, it's like when you're playing favorites, when you have 10, it's like you really got to treat them
exactly
all the same. Like,
that's where the spreadsheet came in, because I started to have with the first couple where they were like, well, you let Jared, our oldest, have a phone at this age, and now I'm that age. And I'm like, oh, well, Jared was also born when cell phones came out. And heck no, are you having a phone because of your oldest brother? Like, now the age on the economy sheet is 16 or, whatever. So I definitely did have to figure out, well, and now our kids are all getting married. So then it's like, well, what's our system for how much money we're going to give for the wedding? If this kid wants to have this kind of wedding and that kid wants to have that kind of wedding, that we're like, here's a lump sum that we will give to all of you. You can have as big or as little of a wedding as you want, as long as you're still like not having Little Caesar's pizza, because we are celebrating with our family as well. And then you can pocket the rest. Or if you decide it's for your greater good to have a big old bang for that date, like, that's the money. And bride, groom, I don't care. That's just how much we're spending. And it has to take the drama out of it too, for us to be able to compartmentalize and focus on each of those areas that are so important to us. Sorry. There has to be, just kind of some systems in place so that you're not exhausted from making new decisions over and over again, that you like take the time, really think, how do I reverse engineer the result that I want, at the end of the day? And then it's the discipline to stick to that.
Is there this spreadsheet available anywhere or anything, or like where are you getting like your ages for, I don't know, like acceptable responsibilities? And is that just something intuitive?
I got it from some, I think, like human development. I think it came from like I think Maria Bowman is the differentiation theory. Also some stuff from David Schnarch, a psychologist who understands differentiation, and just the book Brain Talk, kind of talking about some of these different developmental stages and I think we also just started to see patterns in, when you have that many kids and you're like, okay, this is, how many times have I had an 8-year-old? Yeah, they're capable, they can buy their own shoes, and if they don't have something to work towards and they're bored, they get really entitled and they start like extracting dopamine from wherever, because that it's not as satiating to just be given something as it is to learn how to grow from it, that you have to start figuring out at that age how to satisfy those dopamine longings in a more healthy way. So it's trial and error. And as I was going through like, extreme intensity of needs of children, that like I really studied to like, what is the best system for us? And I've had to tweak it a ton along the way, because I'm wrong every time. And a new kid comes up and gives me like a new situation, but then I can add it to the last. I think God was like, this girl needs a lot of practice, so we're just going to keep giving her kid after kid. But I want to be able to share that family economy sheet, and we're working on a landing page for that kind of thing. So if you follow me on YouTube, Anne Marie Norton, if you go to my Instagram, A Grow in Norton, then you'll see where we're going to have this year, especially with this couples retreat coming up, where that's really a free printable that I'm super excited to be able to share. It's easy peasy.
Awesome. Yeah, I'll be looking for it.
Sounds good. So, sorry, I know we're getting close to the end here, but we usually ask 5 questions to every guest, and we can just kind of answer them pretty quickly since our time's running out. But what's a top financial resource that you like to use for yourself or give to your kids, whether it's a book, podcast, what do you, or do you tell them to go to educate
themselves? That's a good question. Their dad. Yeah, I really do feel like he's done so much research. I mean, Think and Grow Rich, it, I know, is a, you know, classic book that I think he recommends. Also, Secrets of the Millionaire Mind is a book that he recommends to all of his students. But yeah, it's pretty fun. I would just be like, hey, go talk to your dad.
Well, and the cool thing in this situation is go talk to your dad actually applies to a lot of people because he's got his own YouTube channel.
Go talk
as well,
to Jerry Norton. Like, I seriously do have so many homeschool friends who Jerry Norton YouTube video is like part of their curriculum. And on social media too, I've had homeschool moms that are like, yeah, that's literally on their list of things to do to educate themselves about real estate. Just go watch Jerry Norton YouTube. So that's a bonus.
In your case, like, like your younger self, what advice would you give your younger self? Now.
Oh my gosh. That's, I feel like such an easy one. Stop trying to validate myself by doing and intrinsically validate myself by being, and think more about what I want to be than what I want to do in order to get and extract the validation from even from myself or from others. Like, just stop trying to prove yourself and spend the time thinking about the experience that you actually want to have in your life from within. Oh, I wish so bad I would have done that when I was younger.
That's beautiful. Thanks. I'm going to ask the next question. What is your big goal for the next 12 months or anything really big you're trying to accomplish in 2024?
I really am excited about reducing suffering all the way around in my family. Cherishing in, you know, real estate community, I'm super excited about just sharing more of the things that I've learned and having my kids old enough to feel like that it's the right time for me to be able to do that and still satisfied all of the priorities that I have. I also really want to focus on my health this year after 24 years of nursing, like not nursing like you guys, but lactating. I think my body needs a turn. So I want to get some good habits figured out around my health.
So you're done having kids is what you just said. Ten is the limit.
Good, good, solid number.
So you think it sounds like you'd called it quits before that didn't work.
Yeah. I think we figured out all the plumbing and I think we're good.
our audience will appreciate that. So based on our podcast, we call it the Investing RN podcast. So RN for registered nurse, but also for right now. So if you were to tell people to do one thing right now that could change either their financial outlook or just their life in general, what would that one thing be?
It sounds cliche, but just be right now, like be present in whatever you're doing. If you're watching this video, be fully into the video and let it do, or listening to this podcast, let it do everything that it can do. And whatever moment you choose, own that right now and be in that. And I think that will just sprinkle rocket fuel, and just the experience, the intensity of any activity that you do will be so much more intense, so much more satiable, enjoyable. Just lean in, just be.
All right. So this used to be the bonus question. Then we just added it as a number five. But what is the biggest financial mistake that you've made, and how can we all avoid it?
I think the biggest mistakes that we've made is not valuing the visionary and operator positions, like I kind of tried to explain before, and just kind of trying to be all things instead of truly understanding what your skill set is, that you have you're the right people in the right place who have the skill set to balance a project. And a lot of times I think we are attracted towards, you know, people who maybe have the same skill set as we do, but your investments work better when you find people inside the project that have opposite talents than you do, and being able to learn to value somebody who's very different than you are and let their gifts kind of contribute to the deal. We've had like deals that we've taken on with not the right operator, and yeah, doesn't go well, or just hiring a visionary instead of an operator. And you got to make sure that you satisfy kind of all of the different roles, and not go one up or one down about each of the different roles, but truly being able to value them all in their own unique spheres.
Well, this has been a lot, just so much great information. I mean, a lot in a great way, obviously. But so first of all, where can people find you? Second of all, have you written a book yet? And if you haven't, when will it be coming out?
Oh my gosh. no book yet. But we really are excited about ramping up my YouTube. It's my turn this coming year to get a lot more content out. Just like, not my turn, that sounds bad. We really are a team, but we are just realizing, you know, what the resources are that people are really needing now that they've had a chance to get all of the logistics about real estate from Jerry, that we're like, okay, it's only fair that we share the other half of how we've been able to create this awesome life. So just follow me. There's not a lot on there yet, but it's coming. Instagram, you can see more and more is coming. And I don't know about the book. I don't know if we have the bandwidth. Oh, and the couples retreat. So if you follow me on Instagram, I'll have more and more information. Super excited about that couples retreat. It's going to be 3 days in Puerto Rico at this, like, it's not an all-inclusive resort, but it's a resort that has a ferry that goes to its own private island. And there's, you know, multiple pools and restaurants. And the point is not just for Jerry and I to lecture during that retreat, but to give couples an opportunity to be with each other and be able to cultivate some of these different emotions that we're talking about and create the specific plan for your unique situation. So it's not just a bunch of lecturing, but specific time to have fun together, to connect with each other, and to build your business and relationship together. So look for that. I'm super excited about it. Lots of info.
I think you were saying you're doing that a couple times a year, right?
I don't know.
Did you not say that? Okay. I thought when we met you, you mentioned like you had done one and you were doing another one. And maybe you were going to be doing one in Montana and one in Puerto Rico.
Yeah, that's true.
Maybe I imagine
that's
that.
That's true. I like blocked that out of my brain, I think, with everything else.
I'm holding you to it.
Yeah, you nurses will like understand this. So my son had a bleed after his tonsillectomy. So I had three of my kids have, the reason we came to Montana is because three of my kids needed tonsillectomies. And so my one son had a post bleed that was really bad. He ended up needing like a transfusion because of how much he was bleeding. Oh, wow. And so, yeah, it's been super intense these last couple weeks here in Montana. We don't have all the normal SOPs that we have when we're in Puerto Rico that, it's funny. I'm just reacting because we had this conversation when Jerry was like, okay, we got to get that media video done so that we can like tell everybody about the couples retreat. And we were trying to talk about dates and it was like, do we want to do this twice this year? And we were like, no way. Like just we're putting our blood, sweat and tears into it. And I do hope that we can make it into an online platform. But in all honesty, I don't think it's going to be as effective because it's just so hard when you're doing an online platform to set aside all the other things and really go like that focus, compartmentalized, deep that I'm talking about, that I think is the true superpower behind anything being successful, is attention, focus, presence. And so I'm sure maybe we'll do it twice this year, but right now it's set for May. And there's like weddings and stuff going on. So I think only once. So if you see the link for it, you got to sign up right away.
I know we're going to have to.
Yeah.
Sign up.
So.
All right.
Well, thank you so much. Well, this has been awesome.
Thanks again for all your time. Yeah. Appreciate it.
Super fun to talk to you guys. Thanks for having me on.
Thank you for tuning in to another episode of Investing RN.
Don't forget to like and subscribe to the podcast and leave a review if you enjoyed today's episode.
Be sure to share this episode with one other person and follow us on Instagram at investingrn.co if you have any other questions or topics you'd like us to cover in future episodes. Your input is super valuable and we love hearing from our listeners.
Until next time, remember, your financial well-being is a journey, and we're here to guide you every step of the way. Keep investing in yourself and your future.